This episode is brought to you by Paycor, the HR and payroll software made for leaders. It's never been harder to recruit, hire, and engage workers. That's why HR leaders and frontline managers depend on Paycor for all things people management, from onboarding and performance reviews to compensation and benefits. Learn more at paycor.com/leaders. That's paycor.com/leaders.
We're back. It's Distraction. I'm Drew. That's Roth. How you doing, Roth?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm reading a good book that you wrote.
Oh, look at you. Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. That sounded like some really bad stuff that happened to you. How come you never talk about it?
I never talk about it, and I don't. In fact, in all sincerity, like, I was all planning to do sort of a Night the Lights Went Out-centric podcast this week because it comes out next week, but we have more pressing matters to tend to, so we'll talk about the book next week. But it is now the MLB postseason, and so we have to do. You ready for it, Roth?
Oh yeah, I hope it's hey,
it's good. Baseball.
Put a little extra stank on the guide part there.
Well,
I like that.
It's because our good friend Justin Halpern is back. He's back.
He deserves
Justin Halpern
all the stank.
Joins us from Hollywood. How you doing, Justin?
I'm good. It's this long-awaited return. I know the listeners have been clamoring for this charisma to flow through this
They've
microphone.
Been so horny for Justin. They're like, where is the Harley Quinn guy? We need him.
I get approached on the street, and they're like, is that guy still making pizza? Does he still make pizza at home sometimes?
I do every weekend.
Terrific.
Well, they'll be like, that guy, he's the guy who had the Twitter account. We know that guy. We want that guy back on the show. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I don't know if I'd say I'm excited for baseball playoffs, but I'm watching them.
Yeah, well, because your team, the San Diego Padres, faded in the stretch, so we did not get any, which is a shame because they went all out to make this postseason, and they didn't make it, and it sucks that we had to watch the Yankees play the Red Sox for the 90,000th time and have Simmons tweet bitchy bitches about Bucky Dent being part of the broadcast last night. So
that's my biggest thing. Is like Red Sox, I realized this last night, scrolling through Twitter, Red Sox fans are the perfect fans for this moment. They're like this set of like aggrieved, mostly white dudes who are just like sucking up the oxygen everywhere. And their only goal is just to be discussed at all times.
Yeah, like they're unappeasable. Like, they don't want, like, even if the team won the World Series, they'd be like, the fucking Yankee fans never thought that would happen, right?
Yeah, it is. It's like a hostage negotiation where the people who are holding people hostage don't have any demands other than for this to keep going.
Yeah, like they're just asking for more snacks and like, and then sending them back because they're like, this has got shredded lettuce on it. Like, and when I ask for a sandwich, I want like the whole leaf.
Yeah, there's no amount of ransom that's worth letting the children out of the bank. Like, they just want to keep you there forever. Speaking of being held hostage, since you are a Padres fan, Justin, you are preternaturally disposed to despising the Dodgers, and the Dodgers tonight have a one-game playoff, but they go against the St. Louis Cardinals, so it's like,
no, you have to root against the Dodgers. Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm not sure that's true, man.
Yeah, why? No. Can you explain why that is?
Here's why you have to root against the Dodgers. You don't live in, well, first off, I live in Los Angeles, and so I'm surrounded by, for so long, the Dodgers were just like completely irrelevant. It was like,
yes,
10 Mike Sochas every year, and they never, they could never put together anything. And then they changed ownership, good for them, and they just started like amassing. They just took advantage of the fact that no, like 28 of the 30 teams in baseball don't care if they win or not. And the Dodgers were like, well, we'll care. And then they just spent and spent and spent. And like, I mean, come on, that Scherzer Trey Turner trade, you're still rooting for them after they like just load up their weapons cash. Fuck that team.
So to like the answer to that is yes, if they're playing the Cardinals, otherwise it's more complicated and case by case. But to me, the fact that they're trying, it's the same reason I wanted good things for the Padres this year. Like, if 28 teams aren't going to try, then the three or four that are willing to try, I think, deserve a certain amount of support, I guess. I don't know. It's not like the Dodgers need one nervous man in New York City to feel okay about them. Like, that doesn't, it's not a make or break deal for them. But for some reason, I never hated them. I think because they do spend all the money, but they also do the little things right. Like, it's not the Steinbrenner, like, 90s yeah. model where you just go out and hungry, hungry hippos on the free agent market every year and then see if it works out.
I think I'm, you know, part a large part of my hatred for them is that I'm a Padres fan and that, like, they're, you know, we went out and got Blake Snell and we went out and got Yu Darvish. And then they were just like, well, we can't allow you to feel good about yourself for even a moment.
Yeah.
So we're just going to load up with 1,000 more players because we can, because baseball is a MLM and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. The NL West was so stupid this year, too. I mean, I feel like the Padres, like, they did legit fall apart at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah.
But no one should have accounted or would have accounted for the Giants winning 107 games with, like, basically, like, a KBO roster, like, which is fine. It's cool in the abstract sense, the idea of a playoff team built around slugging Darren Ruff and a bunch of bullpen guys that pitched in the Atlantic League 2 years ago. Like, that's all great in its way, but it means that, like, the Padres, who did try, are on the outside looking in with, like, you know, a total of wins in the 90s and a season that should probably have put them in second place. Like,
can I go back for a second, yeah. Justin? Because, you know, we're talking about sort of the standard, they spent too much money type shit, but really your beef is more with the fans of the Dodgers, because I don't live in LA, so I don't have to deal with their fans. All I know is, you know, Vin Scully and Wedekate white uniforms and the beautiful view, you know, at Chavez Ravine and stuff like that. So I have all these nice thoughts about the Dodgers, but I don't have to deal with their people.
Right. Well, here's what happened. The Dodgers fans, the core Dodgers fans, I actually like. Like, the ones who have been here for a really long time, who have, like, who, like, live near the stadium. Like, it's a large, like, Latino fan base. Like, but over the course of the last 10 years, since they've become really good, all of the, like, this is how I know when a fan base in LA has turned, is when an agent will offer me tickets, like like some sort of, like, literary agent, like somebody from WME offers me tickets. I'm like, oh, right, because that's what the Dodgers are now. The Dodgers are, like, everyone who loves the team can't sit anywhere near the fucking stadium. And all of these dudes who are, like, named Colby, who work out at Equinox during lunch, ones who are fucking going to sit in the great seats and have all the seats. It's like, it's the same thing. So it's just a fan base of just, like, dudes who say, like, oh, we won 4-3, and, like, they don't fucking care. It's just about, like, sitting where they'll be seen by other people at different agencies, and then they can make passive aggressive comments to each other at the, like, free short rib station underneath the stage.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty compelling case against. Like, if you're describing basically the outdoor Lakers is what you just said,
yes.
Like, that's right. Bad. I don't like that.
They weren't always that either. Like, the Lakers have always been that, but, like, the Dodgers became outdoor Lakers.
The other thing is that I usually enjoy watching Dodgers playoff games because I used to be able to watch Larry King sitting behind the plate and, like, progressively by inning, his head would, like, his shoulders would go another 2 inches past his chin.
And his head would get lower. Like, somehow, by the end of the game, his shoulders would be above his ears.
Right. He was like Krang, where it was like his head was in the midsection.
And, like, Mary Hart would be a row away looking pissed off for no reason at all. And so, that was, like, part of the ambiance. I required that. But, of course, Larry died, so I'm not going to get, they need to replace him with some other guy who's 9,000 years old and has had 17 wives.
Now he's replaced with, like, Ari Emanuel's third best friend.
Yeah, that sucks.
That's a bummer. Something has been lost. Like, the original L.A. terroir of an old divorce-collecting journalist guy just sitting behind home plate, gradually decomposing on camera. You can't replace that with, you know, whatever, another guy named Ari that Ari Emanuel is already friends with. That's a waste.
I've been told by our own My Three Anantharaman that the St. Louis Cardinals are, like, a fun team, in fact, and she's, like, actively rooting for them, and she's trying to, like, recruit us to root for them, which I find kind of disgusting and repulsive, honestly. I mean, so are the ethics, My Three?
This is what I'll say about the Cardinals. So I hadn't watched much of them the whole year, and then the Padres were a half game, during the middle of the Padres collapse, they were a half game behind St. Louis for the wild card going into a 3-game series against St. Louis. And I watched the series, And they are filled with like all of these dudes who they've kind of brought up through the minors, who have just like the Cardinal way, which is annoying, but also real.
Yeah, you got to respect it, even though there's no obligation whatsoever to like it in any way.
I don't have to respect it. I can spit on it.
The other thing, and Roth, I think you'll appreciate this. The other thing I hate about the Dodgers is I think a likable team has a lot of someday remember these guys. And the Dodgers don't have that. The Dodgers have all stars.
Yeah, like, they're a little too much like whatever. You had the like third pick in a 6-team fantasy draft and just really prepared your ass off for it. And everybody sort of halfway through the season wondering how you also have Tony Gonsolin. Like, that guy was on the waiver wire for that long. Like, yeah. Everybody else fucked up.
There's also like, go ahead.
I was just saying, like, 20 years from now, you'll be like, yeah, you remember this guy? And be like, yeah, I remember him. He was a 7-time All-Star.
Yeah, like, right. Like, he's actually considered to have a fringe Hall of Fame case, like every other player in the lineup of this team. The Cardinals, the one thing that I can also say for them in terms of, like, relative to the Dodgers, is that the guys that they didn't develop are all dudes that they seemingly added strictly for maximum trauma for Dodger fans. That seeing, like, Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado as the recognizable names on a team is like that will provoke flashbacks in the William Morris Endeavor guys if they follow baseball close enough, because they will have very vivid memories of those guys fucking their shit up.
Yeah.
They also, we haven't talked about the specter of Trevor Bauer that hangs over the team. And they signed him basically, you know, to gild the lily. And he's, you know, he will not play for the rest of the season. He may never play baseball again. But the idea that they signed him, you know, just sort of like, it's like, you know what, we'll just throw him on the pile too. And he's turned out to be allegedly and quite credibly one of the worst, you know, sex offenders in the history of North American sports. It's gross to think about. It's very, very icky. And
they knew, like, obviously they didn't know, or I'm guessing they didn't know the extent to which he was a gross fucker.
They knew he was a piece of shit, though.
They knew, yeah. But that's what I'm saying, is they knew, like, you spend 2 seconds, like, if you're hiring anyone, you go to their social media before you hire it, and you're like, oh, let's just get a gist of what this person's like. Like, I don't care if you're hiring a baseball player or, like, someone to work at Defector, like, you're gonna do that?
Yeah.
And I don't know how you could look at that.
If that percentage is, like, 75% gang harassment of random women with 75 followers, like, that should be, I guess, like a red flag of some kind, I would say.
You didn't even need a PI for that shit. Like, your kid could have just given you a report on, like, all the shit that he pulled.
Yeah, like, the Dodgers needed, like, one 16-year-old to be on their staff to be like, yeah, this guy's no good.
That's the part of it that I'm going to just, I'll say it now, and then I'm going to try to forget about it as I try to enjoy the baseball, is that the Dodgers, as an organization, were and are, I think, way scummier than they needed to be in terms of how the famous crimes.xls spreadsheet that they had in their front office that just basically listed all of the sometimes really bad malfeasance that their minor leaguers had committed, that they just sort of kept. That was how they, kept abreast of who was like a serial drunk driver on the AA Albuquerque Dukes or whatever.
Yes.
I guess it'd be San Antonio. But in that case, like, and then those guys that were, I mean, that Kapler and Farhan Zaidi, who are now the people in charge of the on the field and front office in San Francisco, also were a part of that shit. So that basically every bit of like National League West excellence, and I do think that like the Dodgers are probably the best team in the playoffs. The Giants were by the record the best team in baseball this year. There's enough scuzz on both of them that they're easy enough to cheer against. Even though the teams themselves, I think, on the field are decently likable just because the players are so good.
Well, yeah, because also you have the Giants with their owner, Charles Johnson, basically donating to every last horrible shitbag he possibly can and being like, well, I'm not going to do that again. And then he does it like 5 seconds later. Right. He's like, oh, sorry, $20,000 fell out of my pocket.
Dumbest ones. It's not like people that sit on a powerful appropriations committee. It's like he saw Lauren Boebert firing a handgun repeatedly into a mannequin with a Joe Biden mask on it and was like, how much money can I give that lady, the cross-eyed one?
It's a despicable feel when you think about it. Because, all right, so then, if the Dodgers advance, let's just ignore the Cardinals for a second. If the Dodgers advance and they played the Giants, first of all, it would be very compelling because they're natural rivals. No offense to the Padres. Like, they're the
real
rival.
No, it's true. You're right.
Which would be the more, which team would you rather see advance out of that, Justin? The Giants.
I'd rather see the Giants advance out of a Giants-Dodgers because I think that there is, like, this Giants team is just like, it's what you said, Roth. It's like a KBO team. It's like a reclamation project that just kept existing. It just doesn't make any sense that the team, like, I look at that, even when you look at the stats now, look at the stats of the, in the Giants lineup, like, it's fine.
Yeah, it, like, doesn't add up. It's really bizarre.
It's like, how can you win 106 games winning every game like 5-3? Like, at some point, shouldn't you lose some of those games?
But, well, I guess you guys just didn't see the grit that was on
display. It's funny, though, Drew, because the grit element is like, that's the part of it that gets handed down as an explanation. But even if someone says to me, you know, this is Brandon Crawford has probably never been better than he was this year, I'd be like, that's great. Like, that's, he was never the sort of guy that was the best player on a team that wins 106 or 107 games before that.
Right.
Like, I'm sure that, you know, if Brandon Belt was also at his best this season, I would be happy for Brandon Belt for that reason. But it doesn't necessarily say to me then his team becomes prohibitive World Series favorites because Brandon Belt hit 22 homers instead of 18 or whatever.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, baseball is sort of the one sport where it's set up where this shouldn't happen. Like, this sort of thing doesn't happen in baseball because there's so many games and the variables are not as important, you know, because over the course of 162 games, it's all going to, like, work itself out. And with the Giants, it just never did. Like, you're like, oh, fuck, I don't want to face Gossman and Discalfani. It's like, really? Who the fuck are these guys?
Are you sure? Because, like, both those guys were on the Orioles, like, 3 years ago.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but the thing with the Giants I'll give them credit for, too, is that they, like, that is definitely a correct assessment of how they got here. And then they traded for Chris Bryant, and he was Chris Bryant down the stretch. And that's cool. That's what you're supposed to do. I think that I've been struggling to try to find something to write about the Mariners, and at this point, I think the ship has basically sailed. Like, they didn't make the playoffs, and even if they had, they would have lost the wild card yesterday night. But it's the same sort of deal where they were getting lucky in the way that, not like lucky, like winning because like a ball hits a pebble and goes flying into the stands or whatever, but lucky in the sense that multiple players way outperforming any sort of projection. They were getting lucky like that, and then the Giants, like, sprang on that opportunity to make sure to, like, improve their chances of continuing that good luck. Whereas the Mariners just did the Jerry DePoto thing where they just, like, changed five guys out seemingly at random without trying to get better and, like, saved $100,000 in the process. And they, you know, they fell short. They came way closer than they should have. But it's the same sort of thing where, like, you can get all the little things right, but at some point you have to have, you know, a guy who hits third in your lineup who's better than anybody on the other team. Like, that just helps.
Well, yeah. the other team there was also the Blue Jays, also could have made the playoffs on the last day of the season. And this is a team that had to play half the season, like, between Tampa and fucking Buffalo.
Yeah,
because,
like,
they couldn't
at their
play in
Canada stadium.
Because they were a living COVID threat to the nation of Canada. So they weren't allowed to in their own home country. And the idea that they managed to be a contender all the way through is insane. And so to have that team and then the Mariners, who have been shit for so long and yet have fans who are so loyal, to have them, you know, get to the 162nd game still in contention and in potential of forcing 163rd, and to have it go to the fucking Red Sox and Yankees again. Just
literally the Red
shit.
Sox and Yankees. Like, the default setting for postseason baseball on ESPN. It blows.
Over on the can I ask you guys then, since we talked about the top half of the National League bracket, the winner of that little three-team rodeo will go against the winner of Braves Brewers. And I have, like, I feel like that my hatred of those two franchises is rooted in old man shit because I'm, like, a lapsed Twins fan. So when I think of the Braves, I think of, like, forcibly having to watch them on TNT all the time. Yeah. And like Bobby Cox being a shitbag and stuff like that. And then the Brewers, like, they have the Bud Selig stench on them to me. But I feel like I'm dated in that regard. Am I wrong?
Like, I think the Brewers teams? I think the Brewers are like, well, first, the Brewers have a player named Corbin Burnes, who always makes me think of Corbin Burnson.
Always!
Yeah. Yep.
Always!
And he's also really good. But I think the Brewers are actually a fairly likable team. I think that it's like a bunch of, like, my general feeling, having played baseball my whole life, is that baseball players, of all the professional athletes, are the dumbest, like, by kind of a substantial margin.
Because, yeah,
like,
I agree.
To play basketball, you have to, like, understand how to move in concert with other human beings. And like football, there's like so many plays and strategies, and you know, there's 11 guys are responsible, all of them. This guy does this. Baseball, it's like, it's just much, it's much more of an individual sport. You can be a big dummy and get pretty far.
Just go ogre mode. Go up there and mash something with a club.
I think Milwaukee is just like a bunch of ogre modes.
Hats off. I mean, they made it work. They have a lot of people with the RBI baseball animation body type, which is always like what you look for in a baseball team if you are me. But you're right. The pitching stuff too. Like, I think they're the most, they're the team that I would like to see come out of the National League. Cause again, they're sort of doing it the right way. They develop players to be better than anybody would have expected them to be. And the pitching stuff is fascinating. They just keep getting shit right. Like, I wrote about Corbin Burns early in the season and did jinx him. Like, every pitcher that I write about, I do this to. It was when he was on his big scoreless streak. And, you know, whatever. Like, I read three articles and synthesized them into one blog, and then he, like, instantly experienced forearm pain and, like, missed 2 weeks, which is the David Roth touch. But they, that's cool to me. Like, the way that they win is cool to me. And I suppose, I mean, the Braves are also a scuzzy organization, but, like, the Brewers just seem like, if you had to pick somebody to come out of the National League, that's the one that compromises you the least. And then also, yeah, you get to hear Joe Buck say Corbin Burns and stop just tantalizingly short of saying Corbin Burnson a bunch of different times.
Well, also the Brewers play in the city that they're named for, you know, and yep. Atlanta doesn't do that anymore. You know, they play in fucking Cobb County, which is, you know, the Greenwich of Atlanta. Like, it sucks. Like, it's not. Yeah. But also the other thing about the Brewers is that this will be their fourth time in the playoffs, and like, they got to the NLCS the first time they were there, but in general, they're sort of like, they've become playoff filler, and that's not very cool. Like, it's at a certain point, they really are going to have to make a World Series. Otherwise, I'm just going to say, the choker is like a total pud careening in. It doesn't really know much about anything.
Well, the one thing I'll say about the Brewers is, like, you know, I think if you're going to beat the Dodgers, I mean, maybe the Dodgers get knocked out tonight. That'd be lovely, but I don't think they will. And if you're going to beat the Dodgers, you basically have to have three lockdown starting pitchers. There's just no other way to beat the Dodgers, because otherwise you're going to be going into every game in the seventh inning, you're going to be down 3-1, you're going to be down, you know, 4-2, and you're just not going to win. And the Brewers have that.
Yep. And they have a very good bullpen. I mean, even without Devin Williams fighting a wall and losing, like, they still have a really good bullpen. It's just, yeah, it's tough. I mean, the Dodgers are, this is the time of year when I'm reminded of how, because I spend my whole summer watching the Mets, and like, they're stressful to watch, you know, for other reasons. Like, they're stressful to watch. Like, if you're on the subway with someone who definitely seems like they're going to barf and you're trying to sort of like figure out where to stand, that's the type of stressful that the Mets are. Whereas a team like the Dodgers, there's no seams. There's not an easy part of that lineup. There's not the sort of thing where you can sort of assume, like, all right, maybe we get to their starter early, and then, like, you get two guys in the sixth and seventh inning that you can get to. That's not really true there. Like, yeah. They're just kind of perfect. And that's, I mean, it's easier to admire from afar. I imagine cheering for a team like that would turn you into an asshole. Like, it instantly flip some sort of switch in your brain where you start expecting it to just be that way. It's not natural for a team to be that good.
But what fun to be an asshole if your team's winning that
much. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it would be great. I have not experienced, I mean, I guess I experienced it as an 8-year-old. But I didn't, I had all kinds of other problems at that age, too.
Let's take a break and come back and talk about the American League real quick.
This episode is brought to you by Paycor, the HR and payroll software made for leaders. It's never been harder to recruit, hire, and engage workers. That's why HR leaders and frontline managers depend on Paycor for all things people management, from onboarding and performance reviews to compensation and benefits. Learn more at paycor.com/leaders. That's paycor.com/leaders.
All right, we're back, and I want to talk about the American League part of the bracket, because Boston won last night. So we go against the Tampa Bay Rays, and again, we have this weird thing, Roth, where it's like, okay, well, I have to either cheer for Boston, which no, or I have to cheer for the Tampa Bay Rays, who, you know, they're like the Astros minus, like, the front office guy, like, you know, being happy that they signed Aroldis Chapman. Like, so I don't, what's my play here? Who am I? I have to root for the Rays, right?
Yeah, I think so. I've decided, this is like sort of I guess it's an attempt to be mature. It's about a baseball team, so it's not really that strong an attempt or that mature a thing. I've decided I need to get over the Rays to a certain extent. I can't really afford to feel disgust at them anymore. Like, I can find them distasteful, but they're so good at their shit. They're so undeniable at the stuff that they're good at, that at some point I need to get past it, or I'm just, like, finding another way to be unhappy in October, even though my team isn't playing, you know?
Yeah, it's like, I look at the Rays as, like, Uber, basically.
Yeah,
like,
I think that's
Uber,
fair.
Fuck Uber. I hate Uber, right? I hate their, like, leveraging, you know, workers. It's just this, like, grist mill,
yeah.
Right?
But like technology in the service of dehumanizing people that are being underpaid. Terrific.
Yeah, exactly. But also, like, sometimes I'm going to, like, I just have to accept the fact that Uber's not going away. And Uber's going to be here. And there's probably not an alternative to, like, Uber, Lyft. Like, it's just what it is. And that's what the Rays are. They're just, like, they've figured out a way to make sure that they are competitive every year in this, like, just, like, chew people up Soylent Green sort of way. And they're just a tech company that happens to play baseball.
I mean, yeah. The idea that you'll be rewarded for dumping Blake Snell, you know, and getting the one seed the next year, it feels very karmically unfair to me. I don't really like that.
Yeah, I think also the thing with them is that I think that the players that have come up through that organization, like, I remember reading about this in The Athletic earlier this year, that they understand what the deal is. And they're, you know, place in that organization they understand is temporary, that as soon as it's time for them to get paid, they will be cycled out.
Right.
But when they're there, they get to win and they're treated pretty well. That they get the best coaching, that they are not, you know, completely cheaped out on in cheesy ways. It's just also, you know, again, you're cheering for a really good bullpen and a bunch of guys who like take the extra base on singles and stuff like that. It's not an inspiring vision of baseball. It is cool they have Nelson Cruz now. I like it when good things happen to Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, and it's also, I think there's a chance we could see, like, a very special Wander Franco sort of,
oh,
like,
yeah, that's right. They do have
run.
Always fun when they have a guy that is still on that, like, rookie scale salary so they can afford to feature him.
By the way, it's
Franco's
always funny.
Amazing too.
Like, he's amazing. It's also funny, like, the way that they'll tout these, like, especially these, like, personal interest stories about these Wander Franco types. And in the story, they're, like, gleefully talking about how he was taken from his family at 10 and pulled out of school and put into a baseball academy where they, like, don't learn to read or write. They only play baseball.
Yeah.
And if they can't make it, they're, like, tossed back out onto the street at 18, except he was the one that made it. But they tell these stories like, isn't this wonderful that this is happening?
Horrifying.
Right. You're like, so it's like a Charles Dickens story, but Joe Buck is telling it to me.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Exactly.
Sounds amazing.
Isn't
Thank
it
you
so cool?
Much.
He had to go to the baseball child detention gulag.
Right. Yeah. Like the Jackie Chan like biography, except for he can play second base and shortstop. That sucks. It sucks that it happens to people.
So then the bottom of the bracket, you have the Astros, who I think, like, I don't think that their grace period's over. Like, I still have to hate them, right? And they're playing by process of elimination, I can only assume is the most heartwarming team in the American League, and that's the White Sox? Like, is that only because I'm friends with Tim Marchman, or are the White Sox a fun, likable team that I should hope wins the World Series, Halpern?
The White Sox are a fun team, and I enjoy the White Sox. I think they're built a lot more like the teams in the 80s and 90s that I loved watching. I think they're built kind of like that.
Yeah.
It's
Which
a little
teams
bit of like,
from the 80s and 90s?
You know, like, I don't want to say they're like those, like, you know, the, like, Kirby Puckett Twins
Ooh.
Teams where they got, like, one star, but everybody kind of plays hard. You know, I feel like those sorts, like the Cleveland Indians, they remind me of like the Albert Bell Cleveland Indians a little bit.
Oh, okay.
You
know? All right.
Yeah,
it's
like a few home run hitters and then a bunch of guys like way outperforming their talent in much larger roles than they were intended to have.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a pretty cool way to be a baseball team, or at least a likable one.
Yeah. I will say this though. I'm on an island here. I don't mind the Astros at all. I like watching the Astros play because first of all, the cheating thing, like anyone who's played baseball, everyone is constantly trying to cheat. It's just the problem is everyone's stupid. Like the entire like I said, like it's just baseball coaches, baseball players, they're all dumb. And so just to even see them figure out a way to cheat was amazing to me, that they figured out some system that required like multiple people working in concert with one another.
But it was still real caveman shit. It was grog bang lid.
That's what's so good about it. Like they're like the front office is constantly going on about, you know, we've got our big data is bigger than anyone else's and our processes are much more refined. And then you kind of boil that down to its essence and you get down to where the rubber meets the road. And it's a dude in sweatpants sitting in a tunnel hitting a garbage can with a stick every time a breaking pitch is coming. It rules. Like that is perfect baseball shit.
Like the manager in the dugout with like a fucking holding a fucking mag light and just clicking it twice for like fastballs.
Like all the fucking like Harvard Business School guys in the front office, and then the one like how is Babby formed caveman also works there.
Yeah, it's the funniest thing. I don't know if you've ever watched the Michael Bay Benghazi movie.
I haven't. Is it good? Is it entertainingly bad?
It's so bad that it's good. But there's a part in the movie where like Benghazi happens and all of like the analysts are trying to figure out like what to do. And then these like Navy SEAL team dudes are like, it's not your time anymore, nerds. It's our time. And like, and that's what the Astros feel like. It's like all the front office stuff. And then it's like, you know, Jose Altuve being like, take a seat, nerd. We're going to bang on some trash cans and win this thing.
Like, that was great. All that TrackMan shit was really interesting. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to have my friend tape a buzzer to my chest. It's really fantastic. Yeah,
now the Benghazi movie is all I want to talk about, though. I just want to know if there's a scene where, like, Jim Halpert, like, solemnly says to, like, some poor bastard at the embassy, like, Hillary lied and people are going to die.
Yeah, so good. The idea. I love that it's Krasinski, too, that he did, like, 4 Winstrol cycles and grew a beard and was like, I'm a military contractor now.
Yes. There's a 3-minute sequence where guys are just flipping over monster truck tires and working out. It's like, it's on the base. It's
like they're getting ready for a fucking fight against Drago in Rocky.
Yes.
Michael Bay rules, dude. Sometimes you have to be willing to sacrifice historical accuracy for a weird CrossFit montage set to an Audioslave song for some reason.
I do think that's one of the reasons I love John Wick and why it was a hit was because it brought back the 80s arming sequence. Or like if you watch any like old Schwarzenegger movie, like the money scene was him arming himself for like 5 minutes, like putting bandoliers of fucking RPGs across his chest and shit.
Walking
and like,
into just a big room full of weapons. Yeah. Like, yeah.
he's like, yeah, I'm going to do some violence. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, fuck yeah. I'm so hard for him to fucking fuck people up with a rusty pipe and shit like that. And
John Wick is the only one still doing that.
Yep. He's a throwback.
But he's doing it for Benghazi, which is so tone deaf and so perfectly Michael Bay. It's just great. So then it seems to me like the ethically ideal matchup for the World Series here would be the Sox versus the Brewers, which Colin Cowherd would say, that doesn't play in the big markets. But anyway, like, what would be the most hateable matchup here, Justin?
I think Red Sox-Dodgers would be fucking brutal.
Yeah, it would be pretty bad.
Would you still want to look at it? Would it still be compelling to you, like, sort of just from a pure skill standpoint?
Man, I mean, the Dodgers are so much better than the Red Sox. I think it would be a sweep. But I just think in terms of like insufferability, that's what we don't want.
In terms of the raw, like how high is the ceiling for how bad everyone could act? Yeah, Dodgers, Red Sox is – the Red Sox aren't really that good. I think Dodgers, Astros, which there is definitely a high likelihood of in my mind, like would be bad.
What about Cards Astros? Because like the Cards are a 5 seed, but they've done the New York Giants thing before where they've had kind of a shitty regular season and then just all of a sudden go on a tear. And I just dread that prospect and I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, I think like the Cardinals also have like a few guys who really aren't ready for prime time to be on. Like Tyler O'Neill, have you seen how tight his jersey is? He's like a bodybuilder that like is a baseball player and his jersey is so tight. I'm like, dude, you're going to be on TV for the whole country to see in shortly. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of tight uniform hijinkery happening in baseball around the margins that I don't recall. Robbie Ray, I know on the Blue Jays this year, was wearing the tightest pants, and I've been watching baseball for a long time, going back to the OG tight pants era, I've never been able to see both of a player's testicles like at the same time through their pants until Robbie Ray came along. It's really
Is there like a strategic reason for it? Is it like the reason Tony Baselli would like wear like a size XXXS jersey like during games so that like he couldn't get grabbed and shit like that? Or is it just the style of the time?
It's a good question.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You would know better than me, Justin, because you played baseball for like 10 years longer than I did. But there's not a tactical advantage to, you're not intimidating people by showing them both of your buttocks.
Yeah, right? I just, you're not getting tackled on the field unless you're, you know, unless you're playing Pete Rose or something.
I think it's a response to kind of like baseball went to those, like, for a while it was like they were wearing slacks out in the field. Like,
yeah,
the
Barry Bonds just having his shit go down past his cleats.
Yeah, where there was like no elastic on the bottom of your pants. Like, it was just you were wearing slacks. And I think it's like how in the NBA they had the like super long shorts, and now everybody's moving to like, you know, the kind of like
mid-thigh
shorts. Yeah. I think it's just, you know, cycling through trends. But like Tyler O'Neill, he's like, he's so jacked that I don't know a jersey that could fit him properly.
Yeah. The thing that I'll give Tyler O'Neill credit for is that for all the baseball guys that did the sort of canned, I'm doing my own research and I have some questions about the vaccine and I'll take it when I'm ready speech, Tyler O'Neill did all of that and then actually asked questions of medical professionals, did his own research, and fucking got the shot. And there's a story about it. Like, it's, I guess, like, admirable. He's Canadian, so I feel like it somehow counts less. Like, there still isn't an American
totally
ball player that
less.
Did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, like, there's no way that somebody that went to Oklahoma State and said the same speech actually then talked to anyone. They were like, I need to read 10,000 more bodybuilding Instagram posts, and then I'll know whether I should take the Pfizer or the Moderna, or I should just eat more fruit, and that will make me impervious to the pandemic that's going around. But
do
I give O'Neill credit for that.
Do we know what the percentage of vaccinated MLB players is?
They say it's in the 80s, but there's teams like the Mariners are basically as vaccinated as the average big city police force. Like, they're like maybe like 50% ish. And then there's teams that are, they say they're entirely vaccinated, but it seems like it's similar to the NBA where it's like people that got it early were people that were aware that it afforded a professional advantage they needed. And then the stars on most teams were the ones that were most resistant to it.
Yeah, but the NBA is like 95% now. Like,
what's that?
But the NBA is like 95% now. Like, the only holdout is like Kyrie, and he's doing his Kyrie bullshit, and he'll get the shot. But then he'll be like, "Oh, I didn't really want to get it, but you know, they forced my eyes open or whatever."
I don't think he's gonna get it, guys.
Do you really
not feel like he might not?
He can't play a fucking home game.
I don't think he cares.
I don't think he cares. Like, he took off weeks last year, and again, I'm not judging this. Like, I would do the same if I were in his position. He just took off weeks last year because he didn't feel like playing basketball, and I understand that. It's just, you know, that shows that he is willing to walk away. Although he was paid for that time,
I
think
paid.
In this case, he doesn't really need the money anymore either. He's the exception to the rule. Like, Andrew Wiggins doing it, I almost felt bad for Wiggins because he seemed legitimately scared for whatever stupid reason of getting the vaccine. Whereas, like, Kyrie Irving is just sort of one of those, like, he's just reading too many Instagram posts about how pyramids are actually alien granaries or whatever to, like, really even have thought about the pandemic at all. Like, he's got bigger concerns, but they're all really weird and would scan as completely insane to us.
Yeah, I don't think he... I also think he doesn't really like basketball that much. I think he likes it fine. I think he likes basketball the way that, like, I feel about, like, Shake Shack. It's like, yeah, I like it. It's like, if I'm near one, I'll go get it. But, like, I don't... If it's out of my life, I'm fine also.
Yeah. I have to tell you that I think you guys are wrong. I think he enjoys basketball plenty. I think... I believe his take of leave last year was due to, he said, mental health issues, right?
Yeah.
Right, so I don't want to truth or that necessarily, because I have had mental health issues of my own.
I mean, same for
and
me.
I've
what
seen
I mean,
him,
though,
I've seen him perform enough, and I've seen him play long enough. Like, if it didn't really matter to him, he would have fucked off and retired by now. Like, he's been playing in the NBA for, like, a fucking decade. So, I want to project, like, all the worst shit onto Kyrie, but ultimately I just think he's sort of a dilettante, but still wants to be a competitive basketball player.
I respect him, and I think he... As strange and unpredictable as his personal politics are, they're more interesting and in a bunch of important places more responsible than just about any other pro athlete we've got.
Yes.
He's just also, he's a dingus and he's weird and he's going to do weird dingus stuff.
He's a fucking weirdo.
I think you can depend on that. Can I come, before we stop talking about baseball, I want to posit one hell scenario for the World Series that I, it occurred to me the other day when I was on the Batting Around podcast actually talking about the same thing. A worst case scenario for the World Series is Cardinals, White Sox, and it's all La Russa discourse from both sides.
Oh, wow. Yeah. All right.
Wait, can I tell a quick La Russa story?
Yes.
I mean, tell it as long as you want.
Yeah, please. Fucking God, you have the floor.
So my writing partner, his dad worked for, he's from St. Louis. His dad worked for Anheuser-Busch for many, many, many years, like rose up the ranks from the bottom and was like one of the head marketing guys. Anyway, long story short, you know, the Cardinals and Anheuser-Busch, long history. And, this was, his dad finds himself in an elevator with La Russa. And he's a humongous Cardinals fan. And this was when La Russa was the Cardinals manager. And he goes, "Hey, Jim Schumacher, I'm the head of marketing at AB." And La Russa goes, "Yeah, I know. I heard you checked out on the team when we weren't playing so hot." And he was like, "What?" And then he's like, "Ding!" And then La Russa walks out. Which was like the weirdest thing ever, because like, yeah, I think maybe his dad had said something to someone, like in a just casual conversation as you talk about sports, and someone had went and been like, "Hey, the head of Anheuser-Busch marketing thinks you guys aren't playing so well," and La Russa had like filed it away in his head, and then in this elevator.
That's just fucking amazing.
I like that a guy that was basically at that time in his mid-60s was doing the like. Michael Jordan imagining LaBradford Smith talking shit to him thing, but about like somebody else in his peer group. It's like, yes, some other old guy. He didn't believe in us. Fucking haters in the marketing department at Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah. The marketing department said we couldn't do it, but we showed the world. We shocked the brand strategy team.
But yeah, the La Russa discourse is the lowest level of baseball. It's also
walking
the quickest
through a cube
way
farm
to...
like, "You like that? That's exactly."
No, I think the lowest form of discourse is remembering guys, Justin Halpern. You want to remember a guy?
I would love to remember a guy.
Your guy of the week, in honor of you, Justin, it's former Padre Ryan Klesko. You remember that guy, Justin?
Oh, I absolutely remember Ryan Klesko. Man.
Fondly?
Fondly. Okay. There's not a lot to root for if you're a San Diego Padres fan. So when we got Klesko, it was like... it was a classic Padres thing where we acquire a player clearly after his best years. And Klesko was also one of those guys where I feel like if Klesko played now, I think the analytics on Klesko were terrible. Like, yeah, he would like do some flashy things, but he was like mostly a useless player, like bad defender. Like,
yeah,
like
couldn't field any position, loved yeah, to strike out.
Yeah, and he was like part of those Padre teams where it was like they would just try to – all the Padres were trying to do back then was like get 24,000 people to the stadium. Like, that's it. And Klesko was part of that strategy.
Did it work?
Is he a Southern California guy?
That's a good question. I don't know.
He had kind of San Diego vibes, like just in the sense that it's very easy to imagine someone who looks and seems exactly like Ryan Klesko trying to get in a fight with you in the gas lamp district.
I mean, isn't that every white dude in MLB though, Ross?
Yeah, there's a lot of San Diego vibes there.
No, but there's a lot of like faux chillness that they project. That they're the least chill people on the planet, but they project a faux chillness. Like, yeah, Klesko fit in that, like, Brian Giles, Marcus Giles, who are San Diego guys. Like, that vibe of, like, they did some steroids, but we're also chill, and we have back acne, but we like to hang out and drink a beer. Like, that sort of thing.
Yeah, which is it's a very distinctive ballplayer type. You don't have to like it, but you do have to sort of recognize that it's real.
Yeah, he was also part of the Padres teams where every single Padre had a goatee.
Yes. Like, which is really, and it wasn't a playoff thing. It wasn't like everybody's going to grow a stupid goatee. It was just like that was the culture in the clubhouse.
You know, I was thinking about it last night, and I mentioned it, I think, to you, Roth, but I was watching the Yankees play the Red Sox, and it still blows my mind that the Yankees are allowed to have a facial hair policy. Like,
yeah,
in 2021, the year of our, like, does the union not have anything to say about it? This is the most puritanical fucking shit I've ever seen in my life. And old man Steinbrenner is fucking dead. He's fully decayed. He doesn't, like, his body doesn't even exist anymore. Like,
I think at this point, players sign with them just because they want to play with their look.
It's just,
you know, they want to sort of tweet, want to see, like, I mean, they're the Yankees. I'm never really going to like or care for anything that they do. But if they started just signing famously bearded guys to be fourth and fifth outfielders, like, just so we could all see Charlie Blackman's chin before he retires, if they decided to do that, I would support them in that.
Time to play Dead or Canceled, Justin. You want to play Dead or Canceled?
Yes.
They have a bittersweet one. Dead or Canceled. James Gandolfini, is he dead or canceled, Justin Halpern?
Oh, he's dead.
He is. He's dead. He was never canceled before dying or after dying. A rare entry in this game. And I thought of him, of course, because I watched the Sopranos movie, which is actually a very bad movie. And I can't
remember. Is it bad?
It is. It's like, it's 50 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. Like they tried, I mean, he's spinning plates and trying to make sure, like, all the Sopranos characters are taken care of. But he's also got new players in there, and they're the interesting ones. But, like, someone at the LA Times made a good point where, like, you're not even certain what the hierarchy of this, like, old school mob is. Like, who's reporting to who, or even what crimes they're doing. They're just sort of, like, assumed to be gangsters. And then they just yell at their wives and, like, sleep with the Goomba. And then occasionally shoot each other over petty grievances. But there's really no... there's no logic to it. It's just like, well, we hope you like The Sopranos because we're just going to barf this out. And then at the end, and I'm not going to, I won't give away the ending, but the end is very nonsensical, but they kick up the fucking Sopranos theme song, like the opening credits. So you're like, and you can tell somebody in the ad bay was just like, oh yeah, here we go. Now it's time. And I'm sad because, you know, like, Gandolfini's kid is in it and he's perfectly good. But they don't give him anything to fucking do. Like, they have him, like, lay in his room, like, listening to fucking dad rock. And
so,
like,
does it play like a weird pilot for another series?
Yes.
Or is it just...
1,000%. Right. Like, Justin, you work in TV. Like, you would recognize all the... you would recognize that it's a TV writer trying to write a movie, but, like, he can't unfuck his TV instincts to make, like, a solid 2-hour coherent story.
I would also bet anything that their plans, even if this wasn't his plans, Chase's plans, that their plans were, if this does well, we'll make a Sopranos prequel show on HBO Max, and that will be the way we move forward on this. Like, there's no way they weren't thinking that.
I'm sure they're still thinking of it. Like, I know it didn't make any money in theaters, but I'm sure it did great numbers on HBO Max. And it's like, given, like, foreign rights sales and stuff like that, sometimes shit doesn't even have to make money here to, like, be considered, like, a valuable franchise. So they'll go ahead. Like, someone was even talking about there being a sequel to this prequel in terms of a movie where you see, like, more of, like, Michael Gandolfini become more like his old man, because he's not at all like him in this movie. But, like, it's just more... it's just... they're fucking a dead chicken. Like, it's just...
that
enough.
Seems embarrassing to me. The idea, if the movie... I think, in my head, the worst things that it could be, number one... was Tony Soprano Origins, you know, where they do like the Joker version of him. And I think that would be such a waste and such a weird misunderstanding of what was good about the original series. But because it was the same people making it, I assume that wouldn't be the case. But failed pilot that is sold as a movie definitely was the second worst outcome to me.
To that end, let's dive into the fun bag from a letter from Tony, not Soprano. Who writes, Justin, he says, I've worked in a bookstore for a few months now, and my least favorite section to spend any time in might be our self-help section. Every book is either by Malcolm Gladwell, who is gross, an expert trying too hard to be edgy by calling their book Kick Your Brain in the Balls or some shit, or a wealthy failed child or tech goblin insisting you can get everything you want in your life simply by waking up at 3:30 a.m. every day. Are good self-help books easier to find than I'm giving them credit for? And were I correct in assuming that anything I pick up is trash? Justin, has you ever read a good self-help book or encountered one?
Man, I don't read those kinds of books very often. I mean, my feeling on those sorts of things are like, like if someone's going through a tough time and that book makes them feel better and doesn't also put them into a cult, then whatever.
It's a crucial caveat, because I think there's like whatever some percentage of it where like people read at the end and then they just are in Amway, like that's
yeah exactly. I mean, I don't know. I prefer that to like hustle porn with like, it's like Tony V being like, hey, go to a garage sale, find something cheap, buy it, and then sell it for more. You know, it's like those people can fuck off and die. And there's an extent to the people who write the self-help books. Most of them can also fuck off and die. But but I think there is probably, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's, it's not for me, but like maybe it helps somebody. That's fine.
I do agree that the hustle shit is worse to me. I mean, it's a very small distinction between the two, I think, because obviously morbid self-attention and just constantly, like, hearing Jordan Peterson's voice in your own head being like, you should make your bed. Like, that shit, that's fine, but that's your problem. Whereas the hustle stuff, where the idea is you should constantly be out there, like, just kidnapping guys and flipping them for ransom. Like, do you want it or do you not? Like, do you want to succeed? Do you want to be wealthy? Do you want to be independent? Like, that stuff to me is more perverse, and it involves fucking another person. Whereas the self-help stuff, as stupid as it is, and while I think a lot of it does resolve to the same sort of, like, seeing the entire rest of the world as your enemies that must be defeated, it's at least, like, interior as opposed to making it more annoying to collect baseball cards, as I imagine a lot of the whatever Gary Vee shit does.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's okay. I think hustle porn is like capitalist fan fiction.
Yeah.
And it's like, just, it just needs to go away.
Yeah. Cause it's not really self-help. It's really just get rich quick, but in like slightly more flowery language, but not really.
Right. Like get rich quick, but somehow earn it because you got up before the other guy, which is the only thing you have any control over in a system that completely exists to fuck you.
But in general, like, I think there is a division of self-help that is less about, you know, hey, here's how you become CEO of fucking Hooli or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And more about like I've read ones about parenting books, you know, which are about, you know, how to raise your children and, you know, have a healthy attitude toward raising them and so that they react. And they've been useful books. They've been very helpful, but they're not like, they're not in the self-help genre in the way that like Tony Robbins is, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or I've read, you know, when I was having anger problems, like I read a book by a Tibetan monk about how to meditate. And it's like, you know, it's like 80 pages and it's just sort of basic stuff. That's, you know, like, you know, take a walk and, you know, how to breathe slowly and calmly to sort of chill your nerves and shit. And that's all useful. Like I have no real beef with any of those books. It's really when it is super aggro and it doesn't have anything to do with the people you interact with. It's really just about you and like, and it always comes in a listicle that could be in like 3 pages, but it's like, you know, 15 steps to, I don't know, running a paper mill, whatever the fuck. Like then those are all worthless to me.
Yeah. Anything that's basically designed to enhance the suspicion that you are the protagonist of all reality is like extremely deranging and shouldn't exist.
One more. This is from Matt. He writes in Justin. He says, I say that our generation spurs a paradigm shift with how we position our bodies in coffins. We must abandon the conventional eyes closed, hands folded over hearts approach and instead adopt a more badass and or irreverent positioning. If a grave robber encounters me, I want to scare the shit out of him with my eyes open, teeth gritted, and fist clenched. How do you want your body positioned in a coffin, Justin? Would you like to be an alternate corpse or would you like to be the classy corpse?
Well, I don't want to, first of all, I don't want to be buried in a coffin.
I also don't either.
This also reminds me of just, I'm going to be a cliche here and tell one quick dad story.
Please.
My dad sat me and my brothers down and said his request for how his body was to be disposed after he dies is he wants us to take his dead body onto a boat and throw it into the ocean. But not like in any ceremonial way, just like his loose dead body.
Like he wants to go out like big pussy bump.
Bin Laden being.
Yeah, like he's no, but like, yeah, not a like they, like, we don't want to, he doesn't want to be wrapped in anything. He wants his, like, whatever he died in, just carry him to a boat, take the boat out, and then dump him in the ocean because he wants to be eaten by fish. But I would say, Which, by the way, I told him was illegal, and he was like, well, that's not
he's like, that sounds like a you problem. I will be dead at the time.
That's basically what he said. I think if I did want to be buried in a coffin, put me in whatever funny way you want to put me in that coffin. I don't give a shit at that point.
I'd like to be in a mausoleum gaming, like set up in a chair so it looks like I'm gaming. And I don't even game. I just think that would be a funny thing to discover if they, you know, whatever, they open the vault. The guy's in there just playing Mario Kart forever.
I also do not want to be buried. In fact, my wife and I drafted our wills and had them like signed and all that stuff during the pandemic. And we said we would donate our bodies to the state anatomy board so they could be used for, you know, I don't know, discovering a cure for leprosy or whatever the fuck.
For talking too loud, yeah. For having a very loud voice that can't be turned down.
Totally. And then you get the ashes. And I think I was like, I would like my ashes dumped in the ocean or something like that. But I already know, like, it'll be like Big Lebowski, like where you dump them out and like the wind just blows them back in your face. Like that's what'll happen. But I don't, being buried in a coffin, yeah, do what you want. Like put me, I don't know, like put me on my side.
I was going to say, I'm a side sleeper. I think that would be normal.
That's
just
me.
Tuck me in there.
Put my hand on my dick so that I die masturbating. Like I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Like it looks like when Marshawn Lynch flopped into the end zone holding his dick. That's how you want to look like you fell into the coffin.
Justin Halpern was our guest, and his show is Harley Quinn, which is on HBO Max right now. You can watch all three seasons, I believe, right, Justin?
No, two. The third season's coming out early next year.
Ah, see? And then are you working on any other big projects we need to know about?
Yeah, I'm producing an ABC show that's coming out in, I think, probably around January. That's with Quinta Brunson, who's a comedian and was in Black Lady Sketch Show, and she's very funny, and she created it. Wrote it, stars in it, we produce it for her, and it's kind of like The Office but in an elementary school.
Can you say the name of it?
It's called
there's a trailer online. It's called Abbott Elementary.
That's perfect. Great.
So right. she's super talented and very funny, and I'm excited. I think it's gonna do well.
Congratulations, and thank you so much for teaching me about the baseball teams. Because this is, you know, the time of year when I actually pay attention to baseball. So now I'll actually know very, very little about these teams. That's more than I knew an hour ago.
Yeah, and you can jump straight to the irrational dislike phase, which usually is you're weeks ahead.
Well, now I have knowledgeable hate. Informed hate is much better than irrational hate, and I appreciate the just having my base expanded so that I can go and still bitch about the Cardinals winning things. Our producer and engineer is Brandon Nix. Daisy Rosario is our executive producer, and our theme song is by Kirk Hamilton. You can listen to ad-free episodes of The Distraction only on Stitcher Premium. And thanks to us, you can get a free month of Stitcher Premium right now. Just go to stitcherpremium.com and use the promo code DISTRACT. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever it is that you listen. And go subscribe to Defector.com, too, while you're at it. And also, The Night the Lights Went Out does come out next week, and we will have a more book-centric podcast about that time I died 3 years ago. But here I am alive and talking way too loud for Justin Halpern and David Roth. Pleasure to have you gentlemen aboard.
Thanks, Justin.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Paycor, the HR and payroll software made for leaders. It's never been harder to recruit, hire, and engage workers. That's why HR leaders and frontline managers depend on Paycor for all things people management, from onboarding and performance reviews to compensation and benefits. Learn more at paycor.com/leaders. That's PAYCOR.com/leaders.